goodness. Well, first, thanks to everyone here for coming to the meeting that will raise and answer the most important political question that we face right now as a left and as socialists in the United States. Yeah. So before I start this talk, this is something, if you've seen me speak before, I do before every talk, just because it helps me know the crowd a little bit. How many people here consider yourselves absolutely diehard sports fans? Okay. How many people here consider yourselves casual sports fans? You know what's happening, but you know, you're not gonna miss a meal to watch a game. And how many people would rather shave your head with a cheese grater than hear somebody talk about sports for 30 minutes? Anybody?
Oh, you got some recruits.
A lot of people. What's your name, if I can ask?
I've got a cheese grater.
Ma'am?
Jen.
Lovely to make your acquaintance. Well, the goal for this meeting would be to do something that appeals to the diehard sports fans, the casual sports fans, and Jen. If we can do that, we'll accomplish what we want to accomplish. So, what in the wide world of sports would athletics look like in a socialist society? Now, I ask this question knowing that athletics will be constrained by material reality. I need to accept, for example, that under socialism I will not be able to dunk. I was lied to when I joined the movement. But that notwithstanding, let's talk about what we would need to do and what it would look like to liberate play. And before we start, I want to say, and people can choose to argue against this in discussion, please, that I reject the idea that socialism means somehow an end to sports or an end to competition, as if athletics themselves are just this repulsive, warped outgrowth of our sick system, and when you do away with one, its gnarled claw will disappear and it will die a deserved death. That is, pardon my language, balderdash. Oh. Not to get, are there any kids here? I mean, there's frankly a better chance of seeing me dunk than to see an end to sports. We know, for example, from anthropologists that once people could clothe, shelter, and feed themselves, they played. Every human society, every part of the earth, has had all kinds of competitive games. And if anything, the act of play is something that unites us across every possible historic era and every possible national or cultural division. Now, we also should be clear that each era's play reflects the society that they're in. The Choctaw, for example, they would play lacrosse games that would last for days, that would involve men and women, where there would be no line between participant and spectator, and people would take turns playing and watching, that would incorporate dance and food and community. That's how the Choctaw played sports. That's not our society. Our society, our sports reflect our era. I don't know what to call our era necessarily. Let's call it, I don't know, capitalism in decay. I don't know. And in under capitalism in decay, play is hyper-corporatized, militaristic, and sometimes, of course, extremely violent. It can be racist, it can be sexist, it can be homophobic, and it can be transphobic, just like our society. To take merely one example of how twisted our sports world is, I think it says something that our pro athletes, who by any logical measure should be the healthiest people in our society, are oftentimes broken physically and mentally by the age of 50. But our sports, like our culture, is also very contradictory and can produce brilliant displays of athletic awesomeness that I would describe as art amidst the muck. Like, I don't know, for example, how you can watch the Women's World Cup of the last month and not feel like an electric wire was running through your veins. It's been amazing. And even in the most brutal of sports, like American football, which is also, by the way, by far the most popular sport in the United States, there's an art to the game, and there's a reason why it attracts people, despite all we know about the damage it can cause the brain, and despite all we know about the ways in which it exploits and destroys primarily black bodies. It's a sport that's given us people like Colin Kaepernick, and a sport that's given us people like Roger Goodell. Ugh. And we need to understand these contradictions because they also explain just how sports can be a site not only of repulsive reaction, but also a site of resistance. a place where racism, sexism, homophobia, and transphobia have been fought and where ideas have been challenged. I would argue that there is the seed of solidarity in every sport and on every team. And I want to repeat that. There is a seed of solidarity in every sport and on every team. And for example, it's impossible, just a couple quick examples, to consider the civil rights movement without thinking about Jackie Robinson and the desegregation of Major League Baseball. It's impossible to talk about the 1960s without speaking of the struggle against war and white supremacy led by Muhammad Ali. It's impossible to talk about the women's liberation movement without talking about Billie Jean King. It's impossible, as Ali Abu Nima said yesterday, to speak about the resistance to Israeli apartheid without speaking about the struggle of Palestinian athletes inside of Gaza. He called them just yesterday, just sitting on the edge of my seat, about how they are some of the most heroic fighters who have sacrificed their lives to fight Israeli apartheid. And today, how can we talk about the Black Lives Matter movement without mentioning Colin Kaepernick taking that knee and saying, "I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color." And let's remember, too, because sometimes we can talk about Colin Kaepernick, we can talk about Muhammad Ali, and it makes it sound like these people are abstracted and somehow came down from like Planet Awesome to tell us how to struggle in the world. But we have to remember that it wasn't just Kaepernick who took that knee. It was football players, it was volleyball players, it was soccer players, it was cheerleaders. It was male athletes, it was female athletes. I even saw one tape of a school band taking a knee as they played the anthem. If you've never seen anything athletic until you've seen somebody holding a tuba take a knee as they play those notes. And I just think it says something so interesting that high school sports, which is the site, I think for maybe some folks in this room, of so much trauma growing up, has... And we can share those traumas in discussion if you like. This is a safe space to do that. But the fact that this site of trauma also turned into this site of resistance over the last several years says something remarkable about sports. And these chapters keep getting written, as today we have trans athletes challenging gender binaries, and we have Megan Rapinoe out and proud saying, "I am not going to the fucking White House." And just if you haven't read about Megan Rapinoe's story, it's nothing to do with what sports would look like in a socialist society, but you have to know her story. Like, her brother has spent like years in prison. When he was in jail, he became a white supremacist, and he had Nazi tattoos on his face and on his arms, and he had his consciousness dramatically changed by a black cellmate, and so he had in prison tattoos to cover up all the racist shit. And when Megan Rapinoe took that knee in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick, he was leading the cheers behind bars. And I just wanted to share that. So I have no idea what games people will choose to play in a socialist society. No idea what kinds of competition will arise out of a world based on human need. No idea if people will play football, for example. That's for the future to figure out. I do sometimes do talks in front of socialists and I say, "I have no idea if there'll be football in the socialist society." People yell out, "There won't, there won't, there won't." And everyone's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "All right, how many of you watch football?" And people are like, "All right, fine." But I do say with confidence that when it comes to sports, a socialist world will contain some of the old and the new. We will play some forms of the games that we play today, just like some of the games we play now, from lacrosse to tag to martial arts, have origins in pre-capitalist society. Baseball and soccer have origins in pre-capitalist society. So I can say with confidence that a lot of the sports will seem familiar under socialism. But I can also say with confidence, and I think this is better use of our time, what sports wouldn't look like in a socialist society. So let's talk about that. We can even think of these as the demands as we fight for socialism. So our sports demands, our sports manifesto. The public funding of stadiums. Abolished. Yeah. All right, done. The data on this is in. We would be better off, as one economist put it, dropping $1 billion from the sky and letting people spend it as they pick it up than funding what are monuments to corporate welfare. In fact, I would argue a demand on the way to socialism should be that we should demand that these teams that we have paid for actually become public utilities owned by the people, since we're paying for the stadiums anyway.
Yeah.
And that means no more sports owners. No more Jerry Jones, no more Dan Snyder, we're taking over the owner's box. There's a demand as we fight for socialism. Second.
No more Dolan.
Yes. A popular demand in New York. A majority socialist demand in New York. Get rid of James Dolan. Second. The Olympics, in its present form, abolish it to hell. The Olympic Games makes the building of football stadiums seem tame.
In addition
to being orgies of nationalism, the Games bring debt, displacement, and militarization to every city where they land. Every historical example backs this up, from 1936 in Germany and Hitler's Olympics to what just took place, the catastrophe that just took place in Rio in 2016, which, as a Brazilian comrade explained really well in the last meeting, was one of the things that laid the groundwork for the rise of the scum, Jair Bolsonaro. The Olympics as an institution are poison. Now, to be clear, I love Olympic sports. I do. This thing that's poisonous and I want to damn to hell, I think actually displays some of the most beautiful acts of athletics that we have. But I think the future needs to figure out a way to showcase them delinked from the Olympics. We need these sports a la carte. Okay. Now, the Olympics, the other thing we need to abolish, that the Olympics are also the sharpest expression of the way sports, particularly in the United States, has long been used to promote not only patriotism, but militarism, especially since 9/11.
Mm.
Although it goes back way before 9/11. I mean, Dwight Eisenhower was like, sports are perfect for preparing young men for war. They were not shy about this, and they never have been in our modern society. But still, since 9/11, I feel like an entire generation has grown up not even understanding that you could have sports delinked from hyper-militaristic propaganda. I mean, under socialism, I don't think I'm gonna attend a baseball game, which is something that happened to me a few years ago, and find out once I got there that I was actually attending something called Military Appreciation Night, or MAN, as in M-A-N, in big letters, which involves swearing people into the military at home plate before the game, as we were all supposed to cheer. So, under socialism, we're gonna abolish the military in sports, and while we're at it, hey, abolish the military. How does that sound? Why stop at that? Set our sights a little higher. Third, abolish the NCAA. There'll be no NCAA in the socialist society. I mean, if you take a step back and just think for a second that our institutions of higher learning are minor leagues for basketball and football, a minor league that doesn't pay its players, a minor league whose players are disproportionately African American, it's an utterly absurd and gross reflection of our society. It's absolute garbage. Once you get away with all the bells and whistles and the smoke is cleared, all the NCAA is an institution for stealing black wealth. It's an institution of theft, billions of dollars. And one of the first acts as we fight for justice and fight for socialism is the NCAA is gonna pay reparations to the millions of black families that they have destroyed along the way. In addition, I'll just point this out, is that 17 college football players have died in off-season drills since the year 2000, mostly from dehydration or heat exhaustion, and yet these athletes are supposed to be grateful. That's an outrage. This is an institution that needs to be abolished. Fourth demand. We need to abolish, or maybe not abolish, but a better way to put it is transform youth sports in its current form. Absolutely. Millions, first of all, of kids don't get to play organized sports under capitalism because of poverty, because of disability, because of race, gender, sexuality, and resources must be committed to making that change. But in fact, I think in its current form, there are a few more damning indictments of capitalism than youth sports. And I'm not talking about the people who don't get to play, I'm talking about the kids who do play. Recent research shows that 70% of children in this country stop playing organized sports by the age of 13. 70%. That means the first act of rebellion for children, I'm sure there are people in this room who have had this experience. Your first act of rebellion is taking a stand and saying, I am not going to play. Think about how fucked up that is.
Yeah.
Like, that's like your first act. You're saying, I don't want to play. And the research shows that they have every reason for saying this. Too many coaches who think they're Vince Lombardi. Too many messages that, unless they're good, they're wasting everybody's time. Too much pressure. Honestly, too much bullshit. And far from the myth, and I say this as someone who coaches youth sports, that far from the myth that sports are some kind of soft reality where everyone gets a trophy. That's what the right wing's, that's their critique of youth sports. The reality is so different. Instead, it's a brutal reflection of our survival of the fittest culture. Because with public programs dwindling youth sports, what we have is privatization. And privatization of youth sports means a lot of things. One of the things it means is that our kids are being put out there for profit when they should just be playing and having fun. The second thing it means is that it allows them to skirt Title IX legislation, like less access for girls. Actually, this past generation, this generation of neoliberalism, is the first time, and by past generation I mean the last decade, is the first time since the passage of Title IX in 1972 that there's actually been a decline of girls' participation in sports. And that's because of the closing of public facilities and the rise of privatization. So fifth demand here, who things we're going to abolish. Speaking of Dan Snyder, do people know who Dan Snyder is?
Yes.
He's the owner of the Washington, we'll call them the Slurskins. Speaking of Dan Snyder, we're going to abolish racist names.
That's
like
right.
Like the slur that he's doing, the football team. We're going to abolish it. Done. That's a team named after the practice of taking the scalps of Native Americans and selling them. That's its historical root. And we should fight for sports to be a racism-free zone. And that's why any movement for a just sports world should take up the demands of groups like Idle No More and be absolutely four square against all Native American mascotry. And that gets to point the sixth point here, which is that organized sports should also be a refuge for all who want to play. A place where oppression is challenged, not where it festers and spreads. Because a lot of those 13-year-olds, they turn away from sports because they experienced racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia as they were part of these teams. And this runs so deep in the marrow of sports. The exclusion of black and brown people and women was baked into the cake of organized sports in the 19th century. And it led to a status quo that saw the segregation of black and brown players and the gender segregation for women, which exists. In addition, the panic over LGBTQ people in sports has been a constant. And today, the demonization of trans athletes has become a right-wing cause du jour as they attempt to set up sports as a place where only they get to decide who plays. And the homophobia and toxic masculinity, it persists in sports as well. But sports has also been and could be a voice against homophobia, transphobia, sexism on the most grassroots level. It's one of those things I said before about there's the seed of solidarity in every team. There are so many instances. I could stand up here for 40 minutes and just list instances of teams that rallied around their LGBTQ teammates and fought for them to have the ability to play. And I'll say one of the reasons that these right-wing state houses in places like South Dakota are obsessed with like Connecticut track athletes who are trans and want to pass and push through laws to keep trans women from competing in sports is precisely because athletic directors, gym teachers, coaches, and family members in Connecticut of people like Andrea Yearwood, who's one of the runners, like they've rallied around her and says she has the right to play. And everybody is in Connecticut has been like, yes, she does have the right to play. And that's freaking out people in South Dakota. And I think that shows how sports can be a voice against homophobia, transphobia, and sexism as well on the grassroots level. So how do we get there? That's the question. Well, first and foremost, we're gonna need a revolution to get there, straight up. And we're gonna need a revolution in sports. Like, it can't be something that exists outside the world of sports, because one of the things I'm trying to show is that anytime you have a period of struggle, it always reflects in the world of sports. And we're gonna need our revolution to ricochet into the world of sports and engage fans and athletes who are willing to separate what they love about sports with what they cannot stand so they can demand that it change. We need a revolution in sports. I'm going to quote a great athlete by the name of Leon Trotsky, who said that, I think we can still quote him. Listen, but Leon Trotsky said, the history of a revolution is for us, first of all, a history of the forcible entrance of the masses into the realm of rulership over their own destiny. It's one of my favorite quotes. And the history of a revolution in sports is going to involve that same kind of intervention of masses of people to reclaim their athletic destiny. That's the task at hand. We shouldn't have to choose between having our kids play youth sports and seeing them on the sidelines because of a jackass coach. We shouldn't have to choose between going to a game and not supporting a taxpayer-funded arena. We shouldn't have to live in cities branded with Native American mascots. We shouldn't have to choose between staying in the closet or taking the field. We shouldn't have to accept gender binaries or gender segregation in sports. We are going to need an explicit political movement to challenge the racism of the NCAA, to fight for trans athletes, to expand access in youth sports, to end corporate welfare, and to nurture the seed of solidarity that exists on every team. Teams like a youth soccer team right near where I live, where they were attempting to deport the coach, known as Coach Fofo, back to Togo. And I wrote about this. They were deporting him, ICE was on his tail, and the team themselves organized their own solidarity for the coach. They had demonstrations, they passed petitions, they held community soccer games where they didn't keep score just for the purpose of raising awareness for Coach Fofo, because they said, we want Coach Fofo to win. And at the end of the day, it got news, it made big news and locally that all these young kids were coming together, black, white, immigrant, native born, and you know what happened? ICE backed off. And Coach Fofo is still in our community. And but our imagination needs to be even bolder than that. For sports to become all they can be, we need a world where people aren't so exhausted by the end of the workday that all they can do is watch. U.S. workers labor longer than they did a generation ago and for less pay, and that means less play. As the gap between rich and poor has relentlessly grown, we're seeing an absence of leisure time, and it speaks volumes that this country can be so obsessed with sports and also so physically unhealthy at the same time. Yep. Leisure time was a demand during the movement for the 8-hour day over a century ago, and it needs to become a demand again. I mean, one of their slogans was, I'm sure Alan will get it right for me, but it's like 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep, 8 hours of play. Was that?
8 hours for what we want.
8 hours for what we want. Whatever it was, hey, 8 hours. Not bad. Thank you. Thank you. Imagine instead a situation where you don't have to be some kind of star athlete to continue to play. Where you can take the field because you want to build community, make friends, and exercise. Where sports for kids don't have to exist to satisfy the egos of adults, but are heaven forbid fun. Imagine a sports world where oppression is challenged instead of winked at or abided. Imagine the games that could spring out of this kind of world. Imagine the wall between spectator and participant being torn down and everyone getting in the game. Imagine, hey, being able to dunk. It's a hell of a vision and one worth fighting for. So let's smash capitalism and play ball. Thank you.